this is Property Matters, a weekly catch-up on the world of property, supported by Fairview International Property Consultancy and auctionproperty.co.uk. And we're live every Sunday, 10 a.m, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and our website, propertymatterstv.co.uk. If you're watching on the website, please give us a Google review, or if you're watching via social media, get involved in the comments below. Our email address is hello@propertymatterstv.co.uk if you want to get in touch. Also, if you want to listen to us on the move with a podcast, you can do so with our special podcast platforms that we use every week. And every Monday at 10 a.m, you'll find today's show listed there for you to download and use. Also, we're broadcasting every week on Dilsay Radio. So let's say hi to Joe. Morning, Joe.
Good morning. Good morning, Paul. And good morning to all our listeners and viewers, wherever you are.
So, interesting stories for you this week. A housing crisis, say the Scottish Government this week. CIH Scotland say that it hopes that the announcement of the Scottish Government this week that it's declare a national housing emergency will be the political response needed to tackle Scotland's property crisis. Social Justice Secretary Shirley Ann Somerville has highlighted external factors for the crisis, including a decade of UK austerity, soaring inflation, increased costs of living, and labour shortages down to Brexit. Acknowledgement that there is a crisis in housing in Scotland comes after West Dunbartonshire Council became the fifth local authority to declare its own housing emergency. Last year, Argyll and Bute, City of Edinburgh and Glasgow City Councils all declared housing emergencies. Fife Council made the same move in March amid unprecedented pressure on housing and homelessness services. In declaring a housing emergency itself, the Scottish Government will formally recognise the crisis and will call upon the UK Government to reverse cuts in Scotland's capital funding. Too many people, she says, in Scotland are struggling to make ends meet due to the housing costs or struggling to find suitable housing in the first place. We will continue to do everything we can with the powers at our disposal to make progress. But truly tackling the housing emergency will rely on a joint approach between the UK and Scottish and local government. They're calling on the MPs at Holyrood to unite with one voice to demand a change in approach and end to austerity, which has caused untold harm to people across the country. What's really interesting here, though, Joe, is there's lots of words and lots of, it's a bit of a problem, we need to sort this out, but there's no one coming up with an actual plan of what needs to be done.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it, that Scotland has led the way in something that probably is a looming national crisis even across the United Kingdom, if we're not too careful as time goes on. I mean, they haven't been able to meet the targets to build the appropriate number of houses for more years than we can actually care to mention. It seems to be a policy for every consecutive government, no matter who they are, red, purple, pink, purple, or yellow. But the reality is that there is a looming housing crisis. And what Scotland has done is actually brought it to the forefront, not really knowing, as you rightly say, what the solution is. But having listened to a few things this week, one of the things that Scotland's biggest issue is the planning time that is required to get some of the planning. I mean, it is stated that in some cases it's been like 70 or 80 weeks before they've even got to a certain planning application in order to sort of, you know, achieve the goals for the developers to build those properties. And the reaction from the planners is that they don't have enough planning consultants, enough people for town planning in the system that can actually deal with the backlog of files. These may be historical, and they may be also something that has happened over Brexit and, of course, through COVID and so forth. But irrespective of all of those potential circumstances and perhaps in some cases excuses of why things are not coming to the forefront as quickly as they should do, they are all causing a problem to the person in the front line, i.e. the people that need housing, youngsters, single mums, etc., who all need the appropriate amount of housing, and there isn't sufficient. So Scotland is now declared that emergency, and to a large extent, it is followed by things that could happen or probably will happen in the UK in the larger state. And that is because there hasn't been sufficient house building going on. And there are a number of reasons for that, which will, you know, unravel as we go along.
It does seem very ironic, is it? Because there is some data here that says approvals and starts of building of affordable homes is at a 10-year low. This is in Scotland. I should imagine it's very similar in the wider UK. But the truth of the matter is that you'll never get a commercially minded builder to build cheap homes because there's no money in it for them. And so the irony of it is, who else would do that? And that would be a local council, because it's a council's responsibility to provide affordable housing. And yet we had that in the 1980s and we managed to destroy it.
Yes, I mean, we had sufficient council housing. And really, since then, it's gone downwards. We allowed people to buy those houses and have never really been able to replace that stock in an affordable fashion. Cost of building is now extraordinary. It's just, you know, beyond the Richter scale for what it now costs to build a property. And with that in mind, the land has to be bought at a realistic price or given to make sure that somebody is actually going to make some return on their investment. And as you rightly say, builders and developers are not in a position to build those at the cost levels that they are, especially if they're purchasing land at such high prices. Now, it's a chicken and egg situation. What comes first? You know, you've got to have the land in order to do the building. Well, the land is going to be costly. So when you do the building, you know, it's now beyond the levels. We talked about this in sort of in private on matters that we've discussed. And the building cost now is, you know, on the average, £175 per square foot, up to even 300 for, you know, luxury houses. Now, actually, when you look at the level of that and you multiply that by the square footage of the house that is available, it's shocking what it actually now costs to build a house. And I'm not talking about a, you know, good old fashioned, you know, luxury traditional house. Some of these buildings are literally, you know, breeze block skins and a bit of brick, so forth. Not to the standard that the old houses were built. And yet they are now costing a lot. Labor cost has gone up. And so material cost has gone up. And because of all of those things, the people that are obviously paying the taxes or dealing with that and giving the money to the government to spend, they're not spending it or not in a position to spend it wisely. And so for that reason, they have a shortage on housing. And it's a crisis, not just in Scotland, Paul, it's a crisis that I think is looming across the country. And there are many other factors apart from building costs and land cost that are now actually related. Now, the levelling up team were supposed to level up, but I don't think they've found a level to use to level up, because the reality of it is that they have not managed to do anything correct at all. The Renters Reform Bill is pretty much a, you know, dog's dinner to a large extent, because it's a complete mess. It's taken them all this time. And what actually, you know, I suppose from a personal point of view, frightens me is the amount of money that goes into doing all these so-called bills and costs of this and so forth. And actually that money could be utilized far more wisely than all the consultation that they go through, only to find that there's actually no result at the end of it. And that's quite sad. And that's where the people hurt a lot.
I mean, the problem does go back to, and I read this the other day, that when they started selling the council houses off, there was an obligation, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was an obligation on the councils to, and they promised that they would replace on a one-by-one basis. But that clearly never happened. So you have to ask, why were they not held to account on that? Because if they were building another one for everyone they sold, then the problem wouldn't be where we are. We wouldn't be where we are now.
To a large extent, hindsight is a great thing. They should never have sold them. The fact that they say they will replace one for one, what they did is they sidestepped that whole commitment to housing associations. They never built them themselves. So to go back in history, when I started in the business, the council itself even used to be a mortgagor. They would actually say to people that wanted to buy a house, even not a council house, but a private home, they would stand as mortgagors. They'll lend the money to them. So they and through all the legislation, they were actually taken out because it's part of the Financial Conduct Authority and this and that and all the compliance. So the councils stopped lending. They bypassed that situation and gave the whole problem to housing associations. Housing associations were created as a non-for-profit making business, i.e., they will just build and get the Section 106 from the developers and get some money. And so every time they were building over a certain number of properties, the developer had to give either 20 or 30% of the stock at a lower price to the housing association, who, on behalf of the council, were going to administer and deal with that. The problem is, they became two departments. The housing association, whilst they did all of that theoretically for the council, actually were not funding it for the council. They were funding it for themselves, and they had to meet a certain criteria. And then now, when you look at, I've been speaking to people recently where they've had what they called shared ownership. And shared ownership meant that they could buy a percentage of that from the housing association and rent the other side. Well, the rents have gone so high that those people are now regretting buying them, because the rent aspect is now far outweighing their commitment of even the mortgage at 5.25% interest rate. So there is just, it's a complete and utter mess that has been created for the housing department across the board. And I can't say that, I tend to agree with perhaps what Scotland is saying, that it is causing a housing crisis. And then, to make matters worse, the revenue and the levelling up department combined has managed to muck up another source and resource of rental properties, which was always the buy-to-let landlords. And that's become a separate issue.
Yeah, I mean, the property market said this week that, a housing bill should really tackle the issues that local authorities face, tackle affordability of housing costs through increased supply, and implement a tax regime that incentivizes landlords and allows people to purchase the home of their own. And in some respects, there's the problem, because you've got a small supply of properties in that sort of starter home area, and you've got landlords, and you have traditionally had landlords fighting first-time buyers for the same properties. And surely that is part of the problem. You can't please both parties because they're in competition with each other. Unless, of course, you build more homes.
Well, that is exactly what caused that problem. So, again, why did investors or small-time investors or new investors come into the property market? They came into the property market because the interest rates were so low for savers that they felt that the only way they could probably compensate that is to go out and buy a property and rent it out. That they didn't want to do that, but they did. And that became the competition for the first-time buyers and the buy-to-let market. And so first-time buyers lost out, because the reason why the buy-to-let was successful was because the most people had a sufficient amount of deposit to go and buy a second home and then rent it out. And the first-time buyers were struggling to get the deposit to build. So they became competitors. First-time buyers and investors for that same property that was likely to go to the market originally just to first-time buyers, because that's the way the property system works. You need the first-time buyers to kick off that ladder to the next, to the next, to the next situation. That's how it works. You can't sort of almost jump into it unless you are a investor or a cash purchaser coming in straight from the sky and going, "I'll have that because I've got the ability to do it." Otherwise, there was a system, and the system is that first-time buyers need to kick the property market in the first place.
It does seem kind of extraordinary, doesn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, what we've got to do is to get these councils to build homes. But right the way back to even into those days in the 80s and 90s, they've always seemed to avoid the prospect of doing it themselves, always looking for some kind of private finance initiative to do it for them. What's the problem?
The problem is, they don't have the ability to build them. You have to remember that councils are formed by councillors who are general people who decide to stand for their view and right to become a councillor, to support their constituency, their area that they want to be a councillor in. And then collectively, they should be able to put their knowledge directed by someone who has got the ability to show them how to build. But they don't. They're ordinary people that do other ordinary jobs that decide that they want to be a do-gooder in the community, which they do to some extent. But when it comes to such things as building houses, infrastructure, road infrastructure, all the other things, they do need the appropriate consultants. And as the consultants come in with ideas that are perhaps beyond the budget or not within the budget, those things don't happen. And I'm not saying that that was historically right, and I'm not saying it's right now. It's not right now, definitely not right. I know, you know, where circumstances are such that, you know, the never the twain should meet, the two just don't click. There's always a problem. And what the national government is saying and what the actual general committee is saying of the local council is not what the councillors are saying, and it's definitely not what their constituents are saying. So it's a complete mess as far as that's concerned. And that's across the board. Now, other reasons are many councils over the years, even in the UK, have declared bankruptcy or levels of where they've overspent the money or made some investments or bought things that they shouldn't have bought in the first place, but trying to do what they thought was good ultimately resulted on their councils being made bankrupt. So they haven't got the money to build more houses. They're relying on the national government to say, well, give us more handouts to try and do that. And the national government is simply saying, well, where are we going to get the money? Because we've got all those other things that we've got to be doing the right thing. So it's about the money, the land and the ability to build. And none of those are coming forward.
The other thing I find amazing, Joe, is that, you know, as we'll find out in a minute, you know, four families of those whose landlords are selling the property, 4 out of 10 of those people are going to a local council to try and get emergency housing. So they've got all of those people across the UK. You've got first-time buyers who are struggling to get on the market. You've got renters who can't afford the rent. I just don't understand why housing isn't the number one issue for the election and for people in general in this country. Why are we as voters not demanding a solution to this problem? Because they're talking about boats and Christmas, what else? I mean, yes, that's a problem in itself, but we've got problems on the doorstep in terms of where we're all going to live. And nobody seems to want to make it the prime issue.
The problem is, Paul, and I've it's interesting you say that, because I've been having that discussion in general with learned people during the week. And one of the things that I have managed to sort of find out about that is this. That is that the one thing that we have the most power in our hand about in the UK at the age of 18 plus that live in the UK, have got the right to live here, is called a vote. And it's scary to see how much apathy there is in people actually voicing the rights to do what they should do in the first place. So let's just take, for example, some of the recent elections that have happened. If you look at the number of people, if you took 100% people, only about 25-30% have actually bothered to come out to vote, to cast their thought. And that in itself is a major reason why change isn't happening the way it should happen. Back in the days, back in the 70s, 80s, people used to use the privilege and the right to go and vote. We've seen that when they think things matter. Now, the housing crisis is a matter that matters to every person. I've always said in our program here and throughout my career that the most important decision most people ever make is to buy their own home. Every other person I speak to would love to buy their home. Property is the number one investment or number one wish on their list that they want to do. You grow up, you go, I want to own my own house and I want to do this and I want to do that. All of those things ultimately can be the people's result and they don't do it. So I think that only the people can make the housing crisis the number one issue and say that, you know, whoever stands and wants to change that, this is what we want to do. But unfortunately, I call them armchair voters. They moan about it, they complain about all the issues that are happening, but actually don't use the right that they have got to action it. So that then falls to this minimum number of people who theoretically make the decision. It's a bit like somebody saying, you know, give us an opinion on this. And people phone up and say, you know, give us an opinion. And out of 100 phone calls, you might get two that will give an opinion. So they utilize the two as the maximum result on what the opinion is of the market of this particular product. So these are things that you've got to bear in mind, that what they're doing is not utilizing the rights that they have. And that brings us to such things as housing crisis. And you're right, housing is the number one subject. It should be at the top of the agenda. We don't really need to worry, but part of the thing these boats are causing is the housing crisis, you know, because they've got to be housed somewhere. So what about the people that live here? They're not being looked after, yet the ones that are coming in are being looked after or are having to be, you know, it's almost worth coming in on a boat in a funny sort of way and say, I need a house, for those that are trying to get a house, because maybe they got a better chance.
I think the issue for people and the reason for the apathy, I think, is because there's nobody that's, you can't vote for someone who's not asking or saying they're going to deliver the things that you want. And the trouble is, all of the politicians at the moment, to me, have not got any clue how to solve the housing crisis, which is why they don't want to talk about it. So who can you vote for? How can you vote for someone when they're not talking about the things you want to talk about? And I think the other thing is that, firstly, back in the 70s and 80s, we had two very distinct styles of government, one that controlled the state and one that was all for free enterprise. And you had the Labour Party providing all the council houses and everybody was home and everyone was going to be happy, but that didn't work out. So we then went and sold everything and put everything down to market forces, and that didn't work out. So at least you had two very disparate choices. Now everybody's clinging to the centre because everybody wants to be appealing and not, you know, spendthrift Labour or Margaret Thatcher's kind of sod everybody else, let's just make a load of money and not care about anyone. Nobody wants those two extremes anymore. So you've actually got everyone's clinging to the centre, and there's no choice between anybody. And no one's talking about housing.
And the point I'm trying to make about when they say that they've got the right to do, it's those people that can actually bring the housing. I mean, the reason why they don't talk about it, they don't know how to solve it. But if you take what Scotland's doing now and causing it a crisis right now, you know, in a heartbeat, that is what's going to start to focus them. That's what the minister there is saying, we need to do X, Y, Z to get these things. It's taken that point, and it's the people voice, the people power, that's now come to a point where they've turned around and said, we actually have a housing crisis. So why does it take it to that level to get this resolved? Maybe that is the only way it's going to get resolved. But a housing crisis is a big problem, just not for Scotland, but I think we'll find that in the years to come, it will become an issue across the board.
Well, let's have a look at what the future may hold, Joe, because this is a potential look into the future about how we may well be running our towns and cities, because in the same way that we now let other countries build our power stations, we're going to let commercial enterprises build our town centres for us because we can't build them ourselves. And Asda is the latest retailer giant to announce that it is entering the property market. The supermarket giant this week unveiled plans for a transformational mixed-use redevelopment of its 10-acre Park Royal site in northwest London. The retailer has partnered with property developer Barratt London on plans to redevelop the Brownfield site, which is currently home to its Park Royal store. The proposal, which is subject to planning approval, includes creating a new town centre for the local community at the heart of the Old Oak and Park Royal Development Corporation major regeneration area. It will feature a brand new 60,000 square feet flagship Asda Superstore and up to 400 car parking spaces. In addition, up to 1,500 new homes are planned. 500 of these will be affordable. A large number of apartments will utilise a landscape podium above the new Asda. The majority of the new homes will provide high quality dual aspect accommodation. Sustainability will be at the heart of this new site, with the scheme providing significant biodiversity and ecological net gains. The use of public transport will be encouraged as the proposed car park residential development while the car park will benefit from EV parking spaces. It's a mixed-use redevelopment of an established store site. It's a first for Asda and represents one of the biggest land deals of the last couple of years. They're going to keep the whole thing open while they're doing it and build a new store nearby and then move over into that. They're going to have retail units, restaurants, health and wellness facilities and high-quality public realm space. Plans would allow for Asda's existing Park Royal Superstore to remain fully open and continue to serve the community. So that's an interesting situation, Joe. But then you've got commercial organisations who arguably have too much force in our lives anyway through the control of food prices now running our town centres as well.
Well, look, you know, it's the lesser of the two evils, isn't it? Either we do or we don't situation. And if we sit and wait for the chosen governments of the day to make any inroads, we know that that has not been successful at all. And I'm not surprised. And I think we've discussed again this particular kind of idea way back in our program previously. And I, whilst it's commercial and it's a game for somebody to do it, the fact is that it is going to regenerate an area. I think it's a great idea. I think it's an opportunity for 1,500 potential new homes, of which some will be affordable. So, you know, the private enterprise is at least perhaps producing the homes that the government has not been able to approve, and they're not going to continue to be able to approve. The benefits here is Asda own the 10-acre site. So, you know, there's not a purchase of a land site. Now, to purchase that 10-acre site to do a housing development alone would be, you know, a point that would take the idea completely off the table. So the fact that they own the site and they are now looking to develop it, though it's seen as a business enterprise, it's also seen as a regeneration of that particular area, which is very, very important. And the next generation are interested in such opportunity where, you know, accessibility, both for public transport, quality of homes, and the restaurants and the socializing that might be available in that sort of vicinity will be the right way to go. And I see that. And it actually, if you look at it, it's been happening in some big towns anyway, because they took the business out of town and they destroyed the town center. The music to my ears in this particular point is that they want to create a high street. And high street has always been a center hub point to any community. And if the high street and the town center of your town is an attractive place where you would like to go and socialize, spend your money and shop, is actually a huge vibration. It vibrates the entire town and brings lots of communities together. And as opposed to them just sitting there idle and shops shut down and looking rubbish and making the town look rubbish. So I think, you know, it's the right, I've always felt, I think I've said it before, many of the other stores, other operators like Asda, Tesco, Sainsbury's, Waitrose, all of these people that own major out-of-town shopping facilities or close to town centre shopping facilities will take the same route because they've got that space. What does it do for them? Well, what it does for them is it gives them 1,500 homes ready to buy in their shops below. You know, 60,000 square foot of Asda will have ready-made customers when they have 1,500 homes that are either sold or rented to people. So that's not really a bad business move from their part. If those that can't sell them, they will keep them and continue to have rental income. So, but the question I say here is, why do the councils not do that? Well, the councils could do that. They own land, they have those things, but they do what I call stupid things. They do silly things that don't actually make business sense. I know of councils that have used council money to go and buy investment assets in other towns, when actually really what they should have done is invest that money in their own town. So it's about, you know, the garden fence things look greener on the other side than they do in your own town. You should make that investment in their own town. So I actually think that this is, whether it's private or whether it's business, the fact is that someone has actually taken an initiative to make something or an area that perhaps could be revived to bring it together. And if they've done it collectively with a developer, obviously that's a route because they own the land and they need a qualified quality developer to bring that scheme to line. So it's a kind of a win-win situation.
Yeah, this is not a particularly new thing in some respects, is it? Because in the past, we've often seen, and I can think of Dorchester, for example, where one of the local supermarkets, I think it was Sainsbury's, they got the planning permission to build the store as long as they, and they put it on the old football ground site. But the deal was they had to build a new football stadium for the Dorchester town, I think it is, just down the road. So that's a similar kind of thing that's gone on in the past, I guess. But the genius, as you rightly say about this scheme, is that you're building a new store and also you're building a customer base right above and around you, which is the genius of it. And of course, they would also argue that, well, we're redeveloping a brownfield site. We're not asking for any more land. We're taking land that was not of any real use to anybody before, and we're making it into something. So I can see the benefits to all concerned in that respect. But it, like you say, it just worries me that it's not the same route that the councils are taking. The councils should take a leaf out of their book. And I just wanted to add one last thing on this. As an organisation that is doing a lot of the liaison between Asda and Barratt London, who are the builder, and I think these guys might be helping on the planning side. They're called New Steer. They're an agency that works with Asda. And they're currently working on, believe it or not, it says in here, more projects of a similar nature with other providers. And that will overall, I mean, this one has 1,500 homes going into it, but overall there'll be 12,000 new homes from schemes just like this across the UK that they're working on at the moment, which, again, will be not enough to be the 300 or so that they need to, 300,000 they need to build across the UK all year, but certainly helps a little bit, doesn't it? As one supermarket says, every little helps.
Yeah, and it's a significant amount, isn't it? And those supermarkets that coined the phrase of every little help will probably be at the top of that agenda, making sure that they do not only help the customers, but they will help themselves. In this situation, because they're going to build a great customer base to sell their products to people that they're going to house within those facilities.
Well, I think that's where we must leave it this week, as we are out of time, but an interesting initiative for sure. And we'll follow that one with interest as it works through the planning and into fruition, no doubt. We'll see you again for another Property Matters very soon.